Hey everybody, I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio, and thanks so much for being with us today. We appreciate it. I've got our good friend Howie Knopf is here, and Howie's going to be talking about something that's really of great interest to him. He works with school districts all over the country with Project Achieve, his group. It's disproportionate discipline referrals for students of color. All right, and there's a real challenge with this across the country. We're going to talk about this, get the details, the statistics from Howie, as we always do, by the way, when he's here. Okay, he's over at Project Achieve. We're going to archive the show over at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. That's the home website of our Consortium for Equity in Education. All our podcasts are there, tons of information on equity, our magazine, Equity and Access, our online journal, which is actually a brand new issue up there, lives over there as well. And Howie's got an article in there, I might add. I just remembered that. He's got an article in there, this issue. So please check that all out. You really want to after you listen to this show. Please remember we have a new website. We're looking good. It feels good. Go over there. Check it out, seltoday.org. Social Emotional Learning, SELtoday.org. It's pretty unique. We like it, and it's doing great. And go over, visit, tell your friends, what can I tell you? So ace-ed.org, SELtoday.org, and without a .org, here's Howie Knopf, Dr. Knopf. There he is. Hi, Howie. How you doing?
Well, good morning, Larry. How are you?
I'm fine, my friend. What's going on? Are you down in Arkansas today?
Well, today I am, but we're back on the road, traveling all over the country. I've got, I've got the three school climate transformation grants that we're doing for 5 years, and other work from California to Massachusetts.
So, what's the next trip? Where are you going next?
Next trip is going back up to my grant sites in Michigan, up to the Thumb of Michigan.
The Thumb, okay. Have a good time at the Thumb and get there before winter hits. Tough state in the winter, but I do like it over there. It's good to talk to you, Howie. How's flying been, by the way? A lot of people aren't flying. Are you flying? Is it easy or better or what?
No, you know, honestly, it's about the same. You know, the planes are packed, and as long as they run on time, I'm happy.
Glad you didn't take Southwest this past weekend. 2,000 flights were canceled. Oh, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, we're not going to go there.
Yeah, we're not going to go. Well, literally, that's going to be their motto as of last weekend. We're not going to go there. Okay, so what can I tell you? All right, eliminating disproportionate discipline referrals and exclusionary actions for students of color and also students with disabilities, which seems to me like that could be a challenge out there. What's going on, Howie?
Well, it's a major challenge, and quite honestly, throughout my career, it's been a persistent challenge. I mean, this is not a new story. This is 25 to 40 years old, and the bottom line is that many times African-American and kids with disabilities, they are being referred to the office for discipline in disproportionate ways, and then many times they're being suspended, expelled, put into alternative programs. And again, the issue of disproportionality, not to boil it down to a mathematical issue, but you look at your school district and you look at the percentages of different races in the school district, and then you look at how the disproportionality breaks out in the office discipline referral. So, for example, if 25% of your district is African American and 50% of your office discipline referrals are African American, that's disproportionate. That's not what you would expect mathematically, but it's more of the human story and the toll that it takes on these students and in the classroom.
Well, what is causing that? Are we talking about inherent bias in there? Is that the challenge, or are we talking about kids? Let's just use, in many cases, like African-American kids, some of them come from lower socioeconomic, and I'm just going to say tougher neighborhoods, where they might act out in school, okay? And hence, it creates a problem different from what you might expect from others. What's going on with that? I don't know.
All right.
I'm not justifying it. I'm just asking what the cause of it all is.
Right. All right. So let's go to the core, and then we'll work outside.
Yeah.
But in the court, absolutely, there is always the implicit or explicit bias or the racial prejudice. And, I mean, that plays out when you have white students and African-American students who are, if you will, committing the same mild disciplinary offense in the classroom, and the African-American kids get sent to the office. But the white kids simply get a conference, maybe with their parent, but get a conference. There's your, call it however you want it, implicit, explicit, bias, prejudice, what have you. But, you know, the inner city issue, just to give you an example, Larry, a study that just came out this year, all right, in New York City, from 2009 to 2018, okay? So we're talking about a span of 9 or 10 years. New York City, black middle school kids have an 8-time higher potential to be suspended for 21 or more days than white kids. In the high school, the black kids have a 6-time higher probability of being suspended for 21 or more days than the white kids. So it's not an inner city issue. Okay,
no.
But again, moving backwards, one of the things that we've got to do is we've got to do database problem solving. We've got to do root cause analyses to figure out in a particular district why do we have the disproportionality. And there's not going to be one answer, but here are some of the possibilities. Okay, and this is the problem, is that a lot of districts in this country and states, in fact, they've simply made policy changes. They've simply said, all right, kindergarten through third grade kids, for example, no kid is going to be suspended for egregious discipline. Well, that's not the way to do it, and all the research has told us that making a policy decision doesn't work. We've got to figure out the root causes. So here are some of the root causes. A lot of the teachers in this country never got fully trained in classroom management. So some of the disproportionality may be classroom management. It may be cultural misunderstanding. It could be instructional skill gaps where the teachers are not differentiating for different groups of kids, and then the kids are getting academically frustrated, and then they act out. We've got teachers, let's be honest, some teachers are not invested in certain kids or motivated to work with them. And then you do have the implicit and explicit bias and the overt and the covert prejudice. So the issue becomes, we've got to do the analyses to figure out why the disproportionality is occurring and then link them with the strategic interventions that solves the problem. But what we've been doing in this country for two decades or more is we've been tinkering around the edges, and we don't want to really deal with the issue.
I'm just going to ask you this question. So the issue, where do you, Howie, see the issue? Pinpoint it. Fire it direct right into the target. What's the issue?
I think the big issue is, again, that we're not doing the analyses because we're afraid of the analyses. I think another issue is...
Because it will show that we're racially biased? Is that what we're scared of?
It may, absolutely. Or it may call out individual teachers or administrators. And again, I'm not trying to, you know, cast dispersions on people. These are well-meaning people, but many times these people don't know what they don't know. So your administrators may not have a strong MTSS team and a well-trained staff in terms of your pupil services people, your psychologists, counselors, and social workers that know the classroom-based interventions that are going to help solve the root causes of the problem. If the kids don't act out, whether they're white, black, Hispanic, or whatever, if the kids are not acting out and they're academically engaged, then we don't have this issue. Now, obviously, we're still going to have some of this issue.
Good point.
But we've got administrators that, again, don't have the strong backup for the interventions in the classroom that can facilitate the change. So that's another part of the problem, is that we're not looking at the multi-tiered system and putting some teeth into it in terms of professional development and carry-through and expectations that the consultation will be accepted in the classroom.
And can we find, okay, within the system we have today, with all the challenges in there, Howie, can we find the money and the training to fix this up?
It's not a money issue. It's
okay,
a professional development and a priority issue. Okay, because
well, that's
these
money. You
are,
have to pay for professional development. For professional development.
Well, absolutely, but virtually
yeah.
every school district in the country has got a budget for professional development.
Yeah. Okay.
And now let's
yeah.
let's add on the fact that we've got all of this American Relief Plan money
yes, we
right
do.
Now for the next 2 to 3 years. So with the racial issues being what they are across the country, and I'm not going
to
get political about it, but this disproportionality is impacting the education of kids, and it's impacting the climate and the culture of the school. So how do we not address this? And we've got how many surveys over the past 2 decades, Larry, that talk to us that tell us that the educators and the parents that usually in the top 5 of the issues in education for them every year is school discipline and safety. So how do we ignore this?
Well, I don't know how. I don't know even know why we're ignoring it, let alone how we ignore it. Okay, but we've been ignoring it for a long time. All right, and my curiosity is, what are the strategies, the interventions that are working? Can they be done everywhere successfully?
Right, and this gets to your second question, is how do we get the training and where are the interventions?
Yeah.
And again, there are a number of us around the country, you know, at the teacher training programs, we could beef those up. We've got the school psychology, the counseling, the social work programs at the university. Let's get those folks the training. But we've got virtual training, okay? I mean, I'm not going to put myself on a pedestal, but there's a
you
number
can.
Of us that have been doing this work for 40-plus years, and, you know, we have online courses. We do consultations virtually. We do on-site professional development. And so the training and the science is there. It's the issues of prioritizing it and really doing the deep work of not just doing the workshop, but implementing and applying the information that's being presented in the workshop in the classroom. But we've got 20, 30, 40 different interventions in terms of classroom management that are not being used in this country. We've got effective, again, MTSS, the multi-tiered system, but we've got a lot of multi-tiered teams that what they're doing is they're playing what I call intervention roulette. They're not doing the root cause analyses. They're simply doing brainstorming of interventions, and they're not working. But we're not getting the Department of Education at the federal and state level their guidance. All right, so, for example, here's a study that was just published, actually, 2 weeks ago. So in Minnesota, okay, the Minnesota Department of Human Rights, okay, this is a state department. Minnesota Department of Human Rights identified 43 school districts that had disproportionate discipline referrals. Okay, so what did they do? They said, all right, look, we've got all the data, and we're going to bring you to court. We're basically going to sanction you, and then we're going to require remediation. But we want to give you an opportunity to try to do it yourself. So what 41 of the districts did was they spent a year, and they just spent 2 years, a year of planning and a year of implementation. And what they did was they used all the nationally recognized approaches to deal with disproportionality. They made policy changes, positive behavioral intervention support. Some of the schools did PBIS. Some of the schools did SEL, whatever that means. You've got to figure out what were they doing. Some were doing cultural competence and racial bias training. Some of them were doing trauma-informed practices. And the average district of these 41, they were doing 6 to 8 of these interventions. What did they find? And they compared these districts to 41 demographically matched districts. And by the way, this was a study that was published by the U.S. Department of Education 2 weeks ago, the Institute of Educational Sciences. So this is not some flimsy study. Okay, this is a study that the Department of Education was concerned about. All right, so they did all this implementation for a year. After the year of planning, and what happened? The 41 school districts, all of these nationally popular approaches to address disproportionality, no change. No change in disproportionality.
Yeah.
These strategies didn't work because they're not drilled down and streamlined and implemented to address the root causes of the problem. We're tinkering around the edges, and then there are also flaws in PBIS and in, you know, trauma-informed practices and in restorative justice. Some of these school districts did the restorative justice, which is what I wrote the article in ACE on.
Yep, and we appreciate it, Howie. So the my point is they're all trying, all right? At this stage, do the 41 districts throw up their hands and say, we give up? I mean,
I don't know, honestly, because
I hope they don't.
Just,
that's not my point, but it gets so nuts, okay, out there, and we got, everybody. Let me put it this way: everybody's trying to reinvent the wheel. This must be working somewhere. What you espouse must be working somewhere, and I know you work with decent districts all over the country that make this work. And one of the things that makes it work when you work with them is that you pinpoint it down, and then you stay there. It's not, I'm Howie Knopf, I'll be here for an hour and a half, thanks for listening, change your life.
Exactly.
Okay? It's not that. Yeah, okay? And it has to be, but these districts that you just mentioned, the 41, they tried to do something right, a year of study and a year of implementation, and the damn thing still didn't work.
That's right. That's right.
It's brutal.
But you had one of the answers, okay? And again, I'm just using myself as a symbol of other practitioners.
Absolutely.
There are people like me and my colleagues around the country, a small group that know how to do this, that know that we've got to buck the trend. We can't go with the popular. We've got to go with what works. And we've got to, if we're going to do it, we've got to prioritize it. We've got to build it from a strategic perspective, make sure that it's funded, make sure that it's going to be sustained, make sure. I mean, we have the same issue at a broader level, Larry, okay? You know, the average tenure of an urban superintendent is what, 3 to 5 years?
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
You know, you don't get the sustainability. And what happened? Well, a school board doesn't sit there and say, well, you know, we got a lousy superintendent last time. Let's not hire a superintendent. You can't do it that way. If it didn't work, let's find the people and the processes and the science to practice. And that's where the key is. It's the science to the practice, the molecular approach of what are we going to do with this class, this grade level, this school of kids. And it can be done. And quite honestly, one of the reasons why Project Achieve was an evidence-based program through the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, the reason why my work is evidence-based is because we've got the data to demonstrate in multiple sites across the country that this can be done. And this is not about promotion. This is about prevention and productivity and the success of our kids. Because every time we suspend an African-American kid, we end up in a cycle. Those kids are now out of school. They're missing academic work. They may be feeling that the racial history and bias that we know exists in this country is now circling around them. Then their motivation and achievement is impacted, and then we have a vicious cycle. And again, it's not just the African-American kids. It's any kid that's being suspended. And we really haven't talked about the kids with disabilities, which present a whole unique area of analysis, because it's not a kid with a disability. It's a student that has one or more of 13 different possible disabilities. So you've got to drill it down to look at, is the disability impacting the behavior? And if it is, then we get back into the MTSS process where maybe we're not implementing the right interventions to help the student to offset the disability or at least accommodate to it.
Howie, you know, what we're talking about here, has school discipline, and that's been a standard, you know, the old hickory stick, let's go back to the 1800s, okay? It's always been a thing, school discipline. You know, you were talking in class, you're going to get suspended, you have a detention, all this sort of thing. And basically what I'm hearing you say is that over the course of a century and a half or probably more, school discipline has pretty much no idea what the hell they're doing. Okay, that we've been doing it wrong. Okay,
well,
and especially these days as we take into account cultural differences, et cetera, we've really been doing it wrong.
Right.
Psychological differences, I might add, yeah.
Right. But here's the major beginning shift for our educational colleagues. Let's not talk about discipline. Let's talk about social, emotional, and behavioral competence and self-management. Because that's what we need to be focusing on. I mean, one of my catchphrases is the absence of a problem does not represent the presence of skills. So just because I got a bunch of kids in a classroom and they're not giving me a problem, that doesn't mean they have any social skills. We've got to teach the social skills from preschool to high school in a scaffolded sequential scope and sequence. We've got to teach the kids the interpersonal conflict prevention and resolution, emotional control, communication, and coping skills that they need to be successful. But we're not doing that. We're so focused on the inappropriate behavior that we can't get to the appropriate behavior and teaching the kids how to demonstrate that appropriate behavior.
You know, this country, and I always say this, what you're talking about is proactivity versus reactivity, okay? We wait till there's a problem, then we discipline it out as opposed to eliminating the problem through proper training, okay?
Right.
And this is classic Love American style. This is kind of the way we do it here, all right? And but, so let me ask you, that said, and it's a big challenge within schools, okay, and I know you do great professional development, but everybody there is already a teacher. But we got to nip this in the bud somehow. We're always talking about nipping it in kindergarten. Are we nipping it in teacher training? Okay, are we doing anything in teacher training that's training teachers to handle this? Or administrative training, not PD, but when they go for their master's in administration, okay? They look and say, we're doing this wrong. Here's the new way to do it.
Yeah. We're really not. I mean, all of the surveys, 15, 20 years, most recent one that I read was probably about 12 months ago, where we've got national groups, national teacher training groups, surveying their university brethren, and we're not doing the classroom management training. But again, what are we doing at our universities? We're training them again in these popular approaches. So again, restorative justice, okay? Everyone wants to do restorative justice, whatever that is. But here's the issue. Look at the science. A study was done in 2019, just a couple of years ago, by the RAND Corporation. Again, not a minor study. So in the city of Pittsburgh, what they did was they took 22 elementary and middle schools, and they did a restorative justice package. Okay, a three-year package of restorative justice, and then they compared those schools' outcomes relative to racial disproportionality with 22 matched schools also within the district. What did they find? They found, and this is the data, you can't argue with the data, they found that office discipline referrals across the board decreased, but the disproportionality did not. And in fact, in the middle schools, the restorative justice middle schools, the kids had worse discipline problems than when they started, and the staff were so turned off by the program that it started to impact the teacher's motivation and the teacher's instruction. So here we have this popular program across the country, restorative justice, being pushed by the U.S. Department of Education, and the science does not consistently, the objective data, there's lots of studies out there, but not sound studies with objective data. The objective data suggests that the restorative justice programs need to be rethought. They're not working for kids. But here's the common sense, Larry. Restorative justice is about a student restoring or repairing or apologizing for some act of, let's just say, aggression. Okay? So we already had the act of aggression. So one way to go with this is to say, why did we get the aggression in the first place? Let's nip that in the bud, and we don't have to have the restorative justice. But one of the key reasons why some kids are aggressive is because they don't have emotional control skills. Okay? So if you don't change the skill set, they're going to keep doing the aggression and they're going to keep having to apologize for it. So the science is misaligned in the restorative justice programs. Most of these kids are skill deficit and we're not doing the social, emotional, and behavioral instruction so that they never have to apologize. But people are not looking at the science. And for my purposes here, that's just common sense. But, you know, when I say this to educators across the country, they look at me and they say, that makes sense. Why would we do a restorative justice and not do the skill training to prevent the problem right at the beginning?
Of course. So let me ask you this. With a big emphasis on social-emotional learning now, okay, the pandemic, it's always been there, but it's been off to the side, so to speak. Okay,
sure.
And now with the pandemic, all of a sudden, every school district is dying for social-emotional learning, which is why we started the new site. You should go over there, Howie, seltoday.org. But at any rate, okay, with that, what do you foresee in the future? Walk 12 years down the line, kids entering kindergarten now, what do you see?
I hate to be depressing.
You don't have to be depressing.
Honestly,
I'm already depressed. You can't do anything more than that. Just talk to me. Yeah.
All right. I mean, on some levels, I don't expect a whole lot of change. We haven't had change in 25 to 30 years in this issue. Why would we expect that all of a sudden we're going to get a lot of change? And part of the issue, and I'm not casting dispersions. Understand, Larry. Okay. I've received over $40 million from the U.S. Department of Education in my career. Okay, I know what they do well. But what they do is they jump on bandwagons, and they have their own political agenda for the National Technical Assistance Centers that they fund. And once you get a TA center funded, it almost always gets refunded. So our leadership at the governmental levels, not just the federal, but also the state level, but there's a trickle down, they're doing the popular things. They're doing the bandwagon things. They're doing restorative justice and trauma-informed practices and PBIS, okay? So if they've done that for the past 40 years, why would I expect in 10 years that that's going to be different? But what happens is the Department of Ed, what they say is they say, look, This is going to work for you, even though they know it's not going to work. But then they say, the federal government especially, they say, look, we'll give you this training for free. Okay? First of all, it's not free because it's being paid for by our tax dollars. But the point is this. It doesn't matter if it's free if it doesn't work. And another one of my catchphrases is, every time you do an intervention with a student or a system and it doesn't work, you potentially make that student and system resistant to the next intervention.
Absolutely.
So why would we do interventions that are not going to be successful even though they're free? Okay, and talking back again about ARP, what's the federal government doing right now relative to the ARP money? The Department of Education, the Department of Health and Human Services are pushing their TA centers and their programs and saying, look, you've got all this money. Go to the PBIS National TA Center. Go to the Trauma-Informed TA Center, and you can use your money well with these folks. Well, that's like double dipping, first of all. But the second point is, I'm telling you some of the research on this program that indicate that these systems and these programs don't work. But yet, again, if I've got all these things to do as a district administrator, I guess on some levels I'm going to trust the Federal Department of Ed and my State Department of Ed because I don't have the time to vet all these programs. But again, it's still your responsibility because if you implement the wrong program and you make the problem worse, that's on you.
All right. So, Howie, as we wind down here, we do have to wind down a couple of seconds, okay, or a couple of minutes. What do you want school districts to do, seriously? Okay, as we wind down here, tell them what they need to do. What do they need to do? Because I love everything you just said. What's the next step?
All right. In this area,
and by the way, let me take one out of your hand. You can call Project. You can get in touch with Project Achieve. That's Howie's group. Okay. Continue,
right.
Howie. Yeah.
And I was going to be a little more subtle. Okay.
I'm not going to be subtle.
I was going to say, go on the website and read this issue of ACE, and read my article on restorative justice, and then look at the references and work backwards. Okay, because I'm not sitting here. This is not promotional for me. This is about kids and staff and schools. And you got to read the research. That's the answer to your question. We've got to read the research to
That's
practice and then search out the right people that are going to help us to solve our problems at a local level.
I think that's a great way to say it, ended, Howie. I got to tell you, and thank you for writing that article. By the way, it's a long article. We actually continued it over on the website. Did you know that?
That's because I'm so wordy. My wife keeps telling me I gotta cut things down.
No, we loved it, okay, because it went into such great detail. We continued it over on the website.
Right.
It was great.
Good.
Okay,
I hope people will read it.
I certainly hope they do. Okay, and they usually do. We get pretty good readership. Howie, this is great. It's good to talk to you, my friend. Just travel safe, okay? Travel
safe.
All
right, take care and say hi to your wife.
I will, and back at you, okay, to Jules. Thank you, okay?
All right, take care.
Okay, kiddo. Bye.
Bye.
Howie Knopf, thank you, Howie. Howie Knopf, everybody, that's K-N-O-F-F. The K is silent. Over Project Achieve, you can check it out. And also, I'll put it on the website here, but his article is over at ace-ed.org. Click on the magazine, go to the table of contents, you'll see it. All right, we'll archive at ace-ed.org. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks a million for listening.